sixth spot. They come off of corner four, and Carpenter has the advantage as they come off the corner at the line. It's going to be Briscoe.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the PlanetIRL.com podcast. With me today are our senior West Coast IndyCar analyst, editor, and chief of director of operations, Bash. Hello, Bash. How are you today?
Hey, doing great. How about you?
I'm well. Also, again, as usual, our IndyCar series editor, Paul, who was live on the scene at Chicago this weekend. And we're going to do a little review of the past 2 weeks because we were, of course, off last week. First off, I want to just get your overall opinion on the action and if you think it went better this week or, well, of course it went better, but do you think that's what we need or just what you think of the weekend? And first we'll give it to our guest, Bash.
Yeah, it's like definitely, I think they're going the right direction with the new aero changes on the car. I mean, it kind of solidified what we saw at Kentucky in a lot more side-by-side racing and three and four wide racing. It was very exciting last night. So I think they're definitely going in the right direction with it.
I agree. I think everyone is pleased with what they're seeing. I got to speak with several folks in the league this weekend. I spoke with Kevin Blanch. I spoke with Davey Hamilton. I spoke with a couple of the team members from Team Penske, and everyone just feels that the racing is back to what the fans have wanted, what the drivers have had a love-hate relationship over the last several years. We saw it last night, like Bash said, passing all over the place, running in the pack racing, three, four wide at times. So I think the league has definitely made the right moves and got the racing back to what the fans want to see.
Mm-hmm. It did dry out a little bit around the middle, but it recovered after that yellow, and then we had a shootout at the NASCAR style, if that's what you want to call it. So there were debates about the safety of the racing being three and four wide. 10 miles an hour faster than they were last year, so that's the other side of the coin. Also, we're going to do a little review of the Infineon race. So, and that was the other side of the package. The road course in Infineon was not very good this time around, and I wanted to ask Paul and Bash if they think Infineon should still be on the schedule, or if they do, if there needs to be changes, or what they think about that. So we'll start with Paul.
Well, Infineon suffers from the same problem that all the natural road courses do that the series goes to, and pretty much any series now, is that, you know, most of them were built 40, 50 years ago for sport cars, and they just don't provide the passing opportunities with the current Dallara that makes for real good, exciting racing. Hopefully with the next generation IndyCar, they'll address some of these concerns and come up with a package that works better on the road courses. But right now, the Dallara just doesn't work well on these narrow tracks. And, you know, it's the same whether it's at Mid-Ohio or it's at Infineon, or, you know, a lot of people want them to go back to Laguna Seca, which is going to do the exact same thing. They're just too narrow. And I don't see that changing with this package.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, we have to think about the Dallara was 7 or 8 years old, this chassis now? And obviously they weren't even road and street course racing when it was developed. So hopefully bringing it up to a more flexible chassis in the next couple of years, maybe be able to put on a little bit better show on road and street courses than they do. I do have to say that this time, being on the ground in Infineon is always better than watching it on television. And there was a little bit more action going on than the last two races I attended there, which were sort of like, they truly were parades. There were actually things going on the track this year, but as still with the lack of passing zones, it's really tough for, you know, too many people to change positions, unless of course they all run each other off the track at the first lap like they did this time around.
Yeah, that was not good. And the other thing about Infineon and Mid-Ohio and Laguna Seca, they are when they're not racing, they're private tracks where you can go and take your Miata out for a couple of laps if you want to. And for that purpose, those tracks are great. They are exciting tracks to go out all alone and just drive, but they are not racing tracks, in my opinion. They're private testing places or things of that nature. They need more stop-go courses like street courses to induce passing in any type of open-wheel racing. So this week, our finishers were, Briscoe and Dixon and Marias were the top three. And Marias was kind of the surprise of this weekend, and he also did good last weekend. Do you guys think Marias is doing better overall, or is this kind of luck, or what do you think about him?
Well, he looked a lot better last night. From my view, I was in turn three most of the time. Marias, to his credit, I didn't ever see any moves on his part that were just downright scary. He didn't just totally chop anyone off like many of the other drivers did, or really squeeze them down there. He got a little bit lucky to finish third in that last stint when the green flag came out after Elio's crash. You basically had Dixon and Briscoe for first, and then you had about six guys battling for third through eighth or ninth. And if I recall, I think Marias probably crossed the line to get the white flag in either fifth or sixth. And Ray Hall was up on the outside. Dario was up there. Marias was there. I think Matos was up there. You know, there were just a whole bunch of drivers all trying to get that third spot. And he just happened to cross the line at the checkers when he was in third, but I doubt he was in third by very much. And, any one of a number of guys could have taken that. But, you know, the fact that he was running up there, it put himself in that position after a great run at Infineon. You know, he's looked good this year, but unfortunately he just keeps pulling some kind of boneheaded moves that, you know, really aren't unexpected for a 20-year-old. I think I tweeted this morning. I don't know if anyone saw that or not, but, you know, it wasn't but about 6 or 8 months ago when everyone was laughing at KV Racing and, saying what a ride buyer Marias was. And, who's laughing now?
Yeah, I think he's definitely shown that he has talent, and it just seems like, I think you're right, Paul, he seems to be settled down a little bit, not getting himself into trouble, finishing so that he could potentially finish first, like they say. And I think it's starting to bear out a little bit that, you know, he's definitely quick. And so I think it'll be fun to keep an eye on him.
And, Paul, you mentioned someone that kind of struck me, and that was Graham Rahal this weekend. He's never really shined on the ovals, and he made it three wide for the lead there at the end. It didn't stick, but he fell back, and he surprised me. I think he's doing better, and we saw at Kansas they qualified well, but then they raced pretty bad. So I think Rahal is coming along. He's not top level, but I think he's looking better, and he's kind of losing that rookie feel to him.
Yeah, I would agree. In fact, both of the Newman Haas Lanigan cars looked great last night. Servia once again proved how dumb some of these car owners are by not having him a full-time ride.
Absolutely.
He looked fantastic. One thing that dawned on me last night was this oval race really showed that the transition now is really complete, that the ex-champ car teams are now able to run right up there, wheel to wheel, toe to toe, with the established IndyCar teams. I mean, you had KV Racing was up there, Newman Haas Lanigan was up there. With the exception basically of HVM, who was Dornbos just looked completely lost last night. Those champ car teams now they're right up there now. Even Justin Wilson at Coyne, who have been fairly weak on the ovals to this point, he was up there mixing up and running the high line and pedaling just with everyone else. So all of the old champ car teams are really looking good, and it's going to make the ovals even more competitive now.
Mm-hmm. I think that's helped the racing action too. The champ car guys coming back, and Dylan did a story about that on the site this week, so check that out. Speaking of surprises, I wanted to get your opinion on Who do you think has came the farthest this year? Who do you think is the most improved driver of the year in IndyCar this year, Bash?
I'd have to give that one a little bit of thought, but it might end up being Marias if he finishes strong the rest of the season, you know, going from causing wrecks all the time to, you know, finishing races and doing well. So I'd have to think about that, but he might be one of those guys.
And Paul?
I'd agree. I think you look at where Marias has come, geez, even from 6 weeks ago, you know, he's just leaps and bounds ahead of where he was. So I don't think there's anyone else who can even come close to the level of improvement that he's shown this year.
I'm going to differentiate a little bit. I'm going to say EJ Viso, despite, you know, he's had his problems this year, but compared to last year, I think he is, despite his bad luck, he's doing a lot better than he did last week.
Yeah, he's another one that last year was fun to watch because you never know, well, you know, you never knew what he was going to cause, but he's a little bit crazy last year. It does seem like he's settled in, and I definitely think he's fast and talented as well, but I think the team's just struggling this year. That's definitely another one I would consider.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of teams, in a couple weeks here at Motegi, Stanton Barrett told me over the weekend that he will be in the car again. This is his last race of the year, and he doesn't know anything for next year, but he will be in the car at Motegi. Alex Taglioni also is starting his own team with Jim Freundeberg. I'll believe that entry when I see it, when I see the sponsor on the side of the car. So, we're hearing maybe 27, 28 cars like we had last year for next year. Do you guys want to see more expansion, even if it includes back markers, or would you see a smaller field of better cars is better?
I think more back markers, the better. You know, I don't think you want to see any more than 28 cars on the grid. If you had 28 cars and 20 of them were very solid, you know, front and mid-pack cars, I think that would be a uncommon.
Yeah, it kind of, the back markers can be a little bit dangerous sometimes, but, you know, you look at what Milka did for the lead of the race at Mid-Ohio. It definitely can be used as picks, you know, so it can make things more interesting as well to have a few guys back there just tooling around that you have to work around. So mm-hmm. mix it up. But yeah, I think the field getting much larger than 26 or 28 looks kind of scary. I mean, there's going to be too much traffic on a lot of the places we run. I just don't see that as being good.
And speaking of back markers, I mentioned Alex Taglioni a few moments ago. That team will be run using the Marty Roth Racing equipment, which is very sad, and it brings an end to one of the biggest dynasties in all of racing history. So we have lost Mad Dog Marty officially.
Well, he took his toys and went home, didn't he?
He pulled a Jerry Forsyth and cried home to mommy when the kids wouldn't play football the way he wanted.
Oh, well, thanks for the fun, Marty.
You made it fun. You made it fun.
Another interesting piece of news that came out this weekend at Chicago was there was a meeting of the IndyCar owners with the Indy Racing League officials to discuss the future of the series and some of the things that were going on. And after that meeting, Terry Engstadt came to the media center and addressed most of the media and discussed some of the things that came out of that meeting. Some of the ones that I thought were particularly interesting, the one that I think a lot of people would be interested in was when he discussed the issues with Phoenix International Raceway or whatever it's called now. Basically, he did confirm that they had been offered a Thursday night date a couple of years ago that he very quickly turned down. He also said, basically, you know, if we can justify, or he led into it by saying, you know, Phoenix is a market the IndyCar wants to be at. There isn't anybody, whether it's a reporter, an IndyCar official, a driver, an owner, there's nobody in the league that does not want to be racing at Phoenix. And he made the interesting point that said, basically, if we can build our schedule around
around events that make financial sense for us, and you know, that pay the sanctioning fee that we're looking for, then the IndyCar series has the freedom then to hit a couple of these markets that they want to be at, you know, for basically for saying because they make sense from a standpoint of we want to be there, not necessarily because they make financial sense. So I think that gives you an insight on where the league is going, why, you know, they look at some of these places like Baltimore, or they look at places like North Chicago, up in the northern suburbs of Chicago, some of these places that can come up with the money to make these events happen with a pretty hefty sanctioning fee, because they can then afford to do some of these other ones that maybe, I mean, there's no way IFC is going to pay the full sanctioning fee that the Indy Racing League is looking for. So if they could cut them a reduced sanctioning fee because they have a little bit of money in the coffers. So I personally like that way of thinking, that if you can go to a Phoenix, or you can go back to a Michigan, or, you know, some of these other places where most of the fans and the league folk want to be, then you can afford to do that because you have the, you know, the flexibility and the resources to do that.
And you mentioned, I don't know much about the Phoenix situation, but I did talk to the president of MIS a few weeks ago, and he told me that the IndyCar series had been offering them dates, and Michigan did want to be on the schedule, but the only dates that that IndyCar would give MIS are like a week before or week after the NASCAR race, which doesn't make sense for anyone in the whole situation. So I think if the league can open up and be a little less stubborn about things, honestly, that that they'll do better.
Well, I don't know if I buy that story. The league has made it clear over and over and over again that they don't want to go, and they struggle in markets that already have two cup dates, and especially when they're as close together as Michigan is. The specific example he brought up he brought that up again this weekend when he was talking about Loudoun. He said there's just no way that IndyCar can make that work, and the promoters can't make that work when you have two cup dates that are 6 weeks apart and trying to get an IndyCar race between there. He brought that up with SMI. I think it was Bruce Martin basically said, have you re-engaged at all with Loudoun? Terry Angstad just simply responded, no. One word answer, and then he went on to say, you know, we understand SMI has a difference of opinion, and we just as business entities, we've agreed to disagree that, you know, they think that they can promote it and make it work, and we have history on our side that says that they can't. And at this point, you know, until New Hampshire loses one of those dates, or Michigan loses one of those dates, or they spread them out, I don't think the IndyCar series is going to be at either of those tracks anywhere in the near future.
Yeah, but it's just totally oversaturating those markets. I mean, especially in a recession, people they're going to pick one maybe, but they won't go to all three.
And Paul, were there any other pieces of that Angstad press conference that you wanted to cover?
The other piece of interesting info that Terry brought up was the search for the league to secure a title sponsor for the IndyCar series. He said, you know, a year ago I stood here and I swore that we would have a title sponsor. I was 90% certain we were there. And right after I made that statement, then the stock market, you know, crashed then, and it really hurt. He feels good about where the conversations are going with this particular suitor. And he also said that if things fall through with this one, that they have a number two lined up. So I think it's a very, very good chance that come, you know, to the opening race of 2010, that you'll see a name preceding the IndyCar series on the logo and imprint. I just think the title sponsor is there. You know, we've heard Terry say things like this before and say he's got big news coming or he's got something right around the corner. They don't pan out. But I think we're close this time. I really think that the league will hit that sponsor, and
You know, if they can come through with a $10 million a year sponsorship, that's a huge cash influx for the league and can really allow them to do more stuff with that and hopefully, you know, get some of that money to the teams and help them out with some of the things that are going on now.
Mm-hmm. I know they discussed last year, I don't know if the two companies still around were Citibank and Subway. I don't think Citi would still be around because they have their problems recently, so... I don't have an honest clue of who the companies would be that they're talking to, so.
I'm sorry?
I don't know who the companies would be now, because last year they were talking with Subway and Citigroup, and I don't think either of them are going to do that now, so. I don't know.
Subway is still doing okay. I don't see Citigroup in the mix. They're just painfully hurting. Talk is that John Menard has a couple of times offered the title sponsorship or been offered, and they've discussed it. But it sounds like his numbers were in the $3-5 million a year ballpark, and the league's looking for something closer to $9 or $10 million. I've heard just a few other names out there that have been possibilities, but nothing beyond rumors at this point.
Mm-hmm. And I think we'll see John Menard, you mentioned him, involved somehow soon, whether with a team or whatever, because his son isn't doing too well over in NASCAR, and he did have a team before. I think he'll be back as a sponsor more, or as a team owner again.
Well, I think the relationship he has with Vision Racing is working out that well now. I think Tony George and John Menard have a very good working relationship. That team is really now coming into its own with its oval package. They're still pretty lost, well, very lost on the road courses. they could use another driver there next year to really help Ed. It's a shame that Thomas Schechter isn't there anymore, because that team just took a huge step forward when Schechter was there a couple of years ago. But I don't see Menard at this point starting his own team. I think he'll stick with George. And the interesting rumor is that's been kicked around is that John Menard and Tony George may team up to purchase the league away from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Corporation. I don't know if that rumor has any feet to it at all, but that's certainly an interesting one that's going around these days.
Mm-hmm. That would be pretty interesting. I think that covers all the news from this week, so we'll just move on to the awards with Paul and the Whiner of the Week.
All right, Whiner of the Week award. Kind of tough this week. There weren't many people making waves. Nobody was really upset with anything going on this week, at least not too verbally. So I had to get pretty nitpicky about who was whining this week. The closest thing I heard to a whine this week came from Scott Dixon. 2 months ago, he complained after Texas that the cars were too even. You couldn't pass. You couldn't pull alongside anyone. The league had to do something to get some decent racing back. Well, lo and behold, now the racing's back, and Scott complained after the race that now it's too dicey. It's not real safe. It's not something that they really enjoy. He's surprised there weren't several big accidents. For that, for complaining that the league has gone too far in making the race exciting for the league, Scott gets my pseudo Whiner of the Week award this week.
Mm-hmm. And this week, the Eddie Cheever Lunacy Award, I'll be giving that away. And this week it goes to Marco Andretti for taking a biblically high line at Chicago. He was up in the Hornish, or as Paul likes to call it, the Dale Jr. line, and he likes that the rim of the track, and so he is this week's Eddie Cheever Lunatic. And our final award is the infamous Driver of the Week award, and for that, we'll go over to Bash.
And we talked a little bit about that Driver of the Week, and kind of looked at the last two races for this one. We decided that Mario Marias, and probably won't surprise you that we chose him based on what we said earlier, but really coming back from his father's funeral and showing up at Infineon and having a really strong fourth place there, and then ending up on the podium at Chicago last night, is a pretty good accomplishment all the way around, and really showing that Mario is showing us what he can do when he's focused and not making mistakes. And that's definitely our driver of the week, is Mario Marias.
I think that should just about wrap up this week's episode. So be sure, as always, to check out planetirl.com to hear more from us and see our ramblings, and check out the forum and the store and all the other things we have on there for you to interact with. I want to thank both of my guests today for joining me, Bash and Paul, and thank you for listening and reading and supporting us. We'll see you next week.
Here they come. Inches ahead, but Carpenter will not give up.
And Briscoe doesn't have any overtake button pushes left. Carpenter has two.
He has one more lap to go in the IndyCar season. And Brian Herta, hang on for that lap.
They go off the second corner and down the backstretch. And has just a slight advantage. Look back there, however, at Kanaan and Elio Castroneves. They're battling for the third spot.
Oh, here comes Bourdais, trying to get by Tracy on the inside. He may have it. Oh, the contact.